It's The Takeaway. I'm Arun Vanigopal in for Melissa Harris-Perry this week. MHP is back next week. And as we enter some of the hottest weeks of summer, it's a great time to head to your local movie theater. Just hope that the AC is working. So far, there are more audience members returning to theaters this year than last, but numbers are still down from pre-pandemic figures. And what's bringing people to the multiplex is nothing especially new. Once again, it's all about the sequels. There are the mayhem-inducing dinosaurs of Jurassic World Dominion.
Don't move.
Those heroic Avengers, including Doctor Strange. And this weekend's number one movie, Thor: Love and Thunder.
This ends here and now!
And some guy named Tom Cruise.
Good morning, aviators. This is your captain speaking. Welcome to Basic Fighter Maneuvers.
But which releases are actually worth checking out this summer? Let's turn now to Rafer Guzman, film critic from Newsday. Rafer, great to have you here.
Hey, Rowan, how are you?
Great. Also with us is Allison Wilmore, film critic at Vulture and New York Magazine. Allison, thanks for being here, too.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Allison, let's start with you and with this weekend's number one movie, Thor: Love and Thunder. What'd you think?
It wasn't my favorite Marvel movie, but I have to confess that the recent run of Phase 4 Marvel movies have left me feeling a little lost in terms of where everything is headed.
Totally.
You know, that said, it's Taika Waititi. He is good with a joke and good with kind of doing this irreverence, particularly unusual for Marvel type of humor. So it was nice to see some of that again on screen after, in the tradition of Thor Ragnarok, his last movie.
Yeah. Rafer, feelings?
Yeah, I was a huge fan, actually, of Thor Ragnarok. You know, it's been funny to watch the Thor franchise kind of rise and fall. I think it's really been one of the lesser loved franchises in Marvel. And I feel like it was really in dire straits when Taika Waititi took it over for Ragnarok and really gave the franchise a shot in the arm. It was really funny and
totally.
Kind of zany and surreal and and self-effacing. And I just have to say the magic wasn't there for this new one for me. I just felt like the Guns N' Roses soundtrack drove me nuts. Things like that, I couldn't abide it. But you know, when I say that the Thor franchise has risen and fallen, not at the box office, it's been going strong. And you know, this one's done great. So,
yeah. And your first pick, Rafer, is a much smaller film called The Duke, based on a real story about an art heist in the UK. What'd you like about it?
Yeah, well, it's got, first of all, the first thing to like is it's got Jim Broadbent in it as a guy named Kempton Bunton, real guy living in small town England in the early 60s. He's one of these guys who likes to take on a cause and sort of make himself a pain in the butt to people. And his cause in this movie is that he doesn't think there should be a television tax. And by the way, who knew that there used to be a television tax in England? But there was. Somehow, bear with me, he gets the idea, he connects this television tax to stealing a Goya painting from the British Museum. And he does it so well that the police think that the place has been robbed by a group of international art thieves, you know, and they don't know that it's just actually sitting in this guy's closet about 20 miles away. But it's this very odd little true story that, you know, I certainly had never known about. Great cast. Helen Mirren plays his wife. Very charming, very funny, very cute. Like just a real antithesis, I think, to a lot of the big splashy blockbusters that we've been seeing all this year. I thought it had a really sweet, funny little heart to it, and I really enjoyed it.
Great. I love heist movies and I love Goya, so I'm definitely going to see that. Allison, the new Elvis movie has been kind of divisive. You called it fascinating, but you said it's not a great movie. Tell us a little more.
Well, I would say it's not a great movie about Elvis necessarily. If you want a really kind of completist traditional biopic that runs through all of the kind of nitty gritty of his life, or something that actually, you know, engages with the idea of Elvis as someone who took a lot of ideas musically from Black musicians and then succeeded with them in ways that those Black musicians were not able to, you know. This is not the movie that does anything like that. But I will say it is very much a Baz Luhrmann movie. It is just so maximalist. It is so excessive. It only deals with the parts of Elvis's life that interest Baz Luhrmann. And that aspect, I think, is a lot of fun. He is really good at showing Elvis as this performer who was magnetic and also just causing all of these, like, you know, sexual awakenings mm-hmm. in an audience that really just hadn't seen anything like that on stage before. And I think it's tricky to kind of get past a lot of what we think about Elvis as this kind of oftentimes like older Elvis, this, you know, guy on stage in the white jumpsuit and the rhinestone sweating, you know, in Vegas later in life. And I think that one of the things that Elvis actually accomplishes really well is to show why he felt so seismic as a performer on screen for a lot of audiences who had just not seen anything like this before. And yeah. I think that's credit to Baz Luhrmann and also to Austin Butler, who, and I think it's really difficult, who can play Elvis? He does a really good job.
Apollo 10 and a half is an animated movie that came out earlier this year on Netflix. It's by Richard Linklater. Kind of flew under the radar, right, Rafer? I mean, but you liked it, didn't you?
Yeah, under the radar is an understatement. I know very few people who have seen this film. It didn't get a lot of publicity. It's one of Linklater's rotoscoped movies where, you know, mm-hmm. basically it looks like animation, but they paint over the live footage.
Yeah.
And it's just this, it's like a fictionalized memoir about growing up during the late 1960s as the moon landing is approaching. And it's told from the viewpoint of this little kid. He's about 10 and a half years old, the voice of Jack Black. He's a fictional kid. He's sort of a stand-in for Richard Linklater. And it's an oddball little movie because on the one hand, it's just this wonderful, beautifully observed memoir about all the little details that you remember about growing up, every board game, every television mm-hmm, show, mm-hmm. the way the telephones looked, the way the carpeting looked, literally everything you can think of. And there's a little bit of a strange kind of fictional fantasy aspect to it that didn't work that well for me, but I was willing to just kind of ride out this warm bath of nostalgia that Richard Linklater is so good at, you know, right. that he Dazed and Confused, everybody wants him. He's so good at that stuff, and I like this movie.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more movies.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with you on The Takeaway. I'm Arun Vanigopal, and we've been taking a trip to the movies to find out about some of the most exciting releases of summer 2022. Still with me are film critics Rafer Guzman and Allison Wilmore, and we're going to look ahead now to other movies that have been coming out and will be coming out in the coming weeks. Allison, I mean, we got to talk about Top Gun Maverick, I kind of feel, which is the highest grossing movie that so far this year. Why do you think this sequel worked? I mean, it's come in like universally praised, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I think it's one of those movies where you might not have thought, hearing about it from afar, that it was going to be the kind of critical or box office hit that it has turned out to be. But I think that one of the reasons that it's been so successful is that there's been a certain kind of sameness to what box office or to what blockbuster spectacle has looked like recently. You know, it's very heavy on computer generated action sequences. They're often, you know, done by other people aside from the director in a lot of these really big superhero movies. There is this sense that a lot of these movies end up looking the same in terms of what a giant set piece looks like. And so I think the real superpower of Top Gun Maverick, beyond Tom Cruise's, you know, he's still got that movie star draw, is that you see actual, you know, planes being used in actual aerial action sequences. And it looks great. You know, there really is something about just the kind of physics, the way that like G-forces on the actors' faces, you can see it. It really makes a difference in terms of, I think, just feeling a sense of stakes in these action sequences. And I would say it's that and this real sense of this kind of melancholy that's attached to all the nostalgia of this movie. The characters are getting older, but they're still kind of revisiting the same triumphs and stunts. You know, Tom Cruise, he gets called the last, you know, movie star a lot. And I feel like in some ways this movie is sort of about him being the last movie star, but he still really has this ability to just light up the screen that I do think is rare.
So the man just turned 60 last week, but I guess this is not the time where he's like unveiling his beer gut or anything like that to the world.
No, he seems to be really, you know, trying to outrun time, the effects of time, using all sorts of planes and trains and technology.
So Jordan Peele's next movie is also coming out. That's later this month. It's called Nope. Here are Kiki Palmer and Steven Yeun in the trailer.
You think whatever killed Pops is out there?
Right here, you are going to witness an absolute spectacle.
Rafer, you put Nope on your list of most anticipated movies, but with some reservations. What's your mixed feelings here?
Yeah, you know, I have kind of a lot of mixed feelings about some of the movies that are coming up. You know, it's been kind of a thin year so far, and it still seems like a thin year. And some of the trailers for movies I've noticed are not really grabbing me the way that I want to. But I am really interested in Nope. You know, the trailers remain kind of a mystery. We don't really know what the movie's about. You know, it's all we know is Kiki Palmer and also Daniel Kaluuya is in this movie from Get Out. Mm-hmm. They're living on a ranch in California somewhere. Some strange things begin to happen, and that's about all we know. What I'm really mostly going on here is the Jordan Peele name. You know, Get Out was such a galvanizing, incredible film that changed the way people are making horror films and thinking about horror films. I think he continued that, maybe not with quite as much success with Us, but that was a really interesting and very strange movie. Mm-hmm. I like the title. I think it's a funny title, Nope, for a horror movie. And so I'm holding out hopes that the movie will be better than the marketing.
We've got Bullet Train coming out soon. That's got Brad Pitt as an aging hitman. I've seen the trailer for that. It's kind of kooky, fun. A musician, Bad Bunny, is also part of the cast. Allison, you're looking forward to this movie?
I am. You know, it's directed by David Leitch, who is really one of those guys he's a former stunt coordinator who went on to be involved with John Wick and then to direct Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron. And, you know, he and the people who work with him really have done a lot to change what we think of action, you know, on screen. I was just talking about before how there's a real reliance on a lot of really computer generated imagery, but a lot of these movies, they have like real kind of like really beautifully choreographed, you know, fight sequences in a way that really, you know, kind of movies here stepped away from for a long time. So I'm looking forward to Bullet Train mostly because in addition to the cast being just a wild collection of actors, I just want to see people do action where you can see their whole bodies, you know, and see the whole fight sequence happen, especially in a tight quarters like a bullet train. I think that kind of leads to all kind of fun possibilities in terms of a fight sequence.
Rafer, you're kind of looking ahead a little beyond the summer, I guess, to David O. Russell's Amsterdam. There hasn't been so much info released on this one yet, but we did just get a trailer, and you seem to be looking forward to this, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of these movies. I mean, this is sort of what David O. Russell does. He gets, you know, almost literally everyone in Hollywood to be in his film. You know, the leads are Christian Bale, Margot Robbie, and John David Washington. They play a doctor, a nurse, and a lawyer who get themselves involved in a murder in the 1930s, and they have to clear their names. But like the rest of the cast, there's Chris Rock, Anya Taylor-Joy, Robert De Niro, Taylor Swift. It's like the only people that aren't in this movie are the three of us sitting here. Like, we're the only ones that didn't get cast in this. I think it looks kind of fun. It looks maybe a little bit Knives Out, maybe a little bit Death on the Nile. There's some big Lebowski-esque scenes of humor in it. You know, I think when David O. Russell hits, like when he's done a Silver Linings Playbook or an American Hustle, you know, he can really knock it out of the park. You know, sometimes not so much, like with Joy, the Jennifer Lawrence movie. I was not a big fan of that one. But when he's on, he's really on. And again, the trailer's, you know, a little iffy, but I'm looking forward to the movie and I hope it's good.
Allison, do you have a pick for your least favorite or most disappointing movie of the summer so far?
Oh, that's a tough call, but maybe I'll give it to an upcoming movie, The Gray Man, which is another assassin movie. This one starring Ryan Gosling. It's Netflix's big Netflix or big blockbuster attempts. It just does a lot of stuff that you've seen before, and it's from directors I've liked. So I'd say that, you know, it's time. We all are going out to the movies now. We want to see a little more.
You feel that way too, Rafer, that things are kind of up and running again?
About going out, sure. Yeah, I'm anxious to see as many movies as I possibly can. I'm sick of sitting at home and watching streaming content.
I hear you.
Give me the big screen.
Totally. Rafer Guzman is film critic for Newsday, and Allison Wilmore is film critic at Vulture and New York Magazine. Thanks so much to you both.
Thanks
for having us.